Welcome to the Lesbian Book Club with Claire Lydon. Please enjoy the podcast from My Lesbian Radio.
Hello and welcome to episode 17 of the Lesbian Book Club with me, your host, Claire Lydon. On this edition, we're going to be speaking to US-based author K.G. McGregor, and you'll hear the brilliant chat we had very shortly. But as usual, before we get to that chat, we're going to see what's hot in the UK and US Amazon lesbian fiction charts, as well as filling you in on what I've been up to since last we spoke in these chilly winter months. Well, it is chilly and wintry if you're in the UK. Not if you're in Australia. It'd be well sunny, wouldn't it? First up then, the Amazon charts. One thing I've noticed from last time to this time, so January to February, is that there hasn't been a great deal of movement in the charts. I mean, there are books that have come in and out of the top 20 within that time, but there are books that are still high in the charts that were there a month ago. So that suggests to me they are super popular, so well done indeed to those authors. These include Jerry Hill with her Chasing a Brighter Blue, and also Harper Bliss, whose Seasons of Love is still wooing audiences on both sides of the pond. So it's clearly doing a good wink to them. You know what I'm saying. Also doing well in the US and the UK is Eric Schuback's London Harmony series. Now, there's been a series would suggest, there's been a few of these, hence it's a series. And this one is called Squid Hugs, which is an odd title, isn't it? I mean, I like squid. I love a bit of squid, me, but I'm not sure I'd want one to give me a hug in a book. But there you go. Clearly, I'm in the minority because there are plenty of people who want a squid hug. So there you go. You learn new things every day. And plenty of people are also snapping up Miranda McLeod's Telling Lies Online, which is about a woman called Jamie who is pretending to be a man online so she can woo a woman called Claire. Now, I haven't read this one, but frankly, you don't get many heroines to the pound, do you, called Claire in lesfic novels. They're normally called Peyton or Madison or Ashley or those sort of, you know, muscular sounding names. But, you know, even though Claire is spelt wrong, obviously the only way to spell Claire is C-L-A-R-E. This has got an I in it. Even though it's spelt wrong, I think we should all support heroines called Claire. And so rush out and buy a copy now of Miranda McLeod's Telling Lies Online. Also still high in the chart in the US is the audiobook of Carol, fresh off the back of the brilliant film, which was criminally overlooked in the BAFTAs. And I don't really expect it to do much at the Oscars because, you know, it's not going to, is it? But I mean, I would love it if Cate Blanchett won the Best Actress category, but I can't see it happening. But anyway, brilliant film. If you haven't seen it, rush and see it. But the book, I still haven't read it. I must do that. And do you know what? I'm going to try and read The Price of Salt by the time the next podcast comes out. And I'm also going to try and read Catherine Hyde's The Language of Hoofbeats, which is still clip-clopping its way to the top in the US. It's piqued my interest because it's been there a very long time now. So I think I'm going to read those two books before next book club. You have my word on that one, okay? Call me on it if I don't do it. I will. I'm going to put a reminder in my phone and everything. And I obey my phone. And at number one on February 22nd, as I record this, is J.A. Armstrong's next book in her special delivery series. And this one's called Handle With Care. And she has clearly handled it with great care, and her fans are frankly going doolally, I tell you, doolally about it. So, I mean, J.I. Armstrong doesn't need an introduction. Her novellas just do fantastically well in the UK and the US, and I'm sure around the rest of the globe. So, you know, kudos to her. So that's the Amazon lesbian fiction charts in the US and the UK. So how's your February been? February for me is normally, I'm not that keen on winter generally. I like a spring and I like an autumn. But summer and winter, they're mainly too extreme for me. Well, the summer in the UK is normally a bit rainy. But I think the winter, I do like a crisp, sunny winter day. And there's been quite a lot of those this winter, so I've quite enjoyed it. When it gets too cold, I just get a bit grumpy. But it hasn't been that cold in the UK, so I've quite enjoyed February this year. And I have been trying to get out and do a bit more walking. But I have also been super busy cracking on with my new novella. And I just sent it to my editor today, which is awesome. So all being well, it will be out for sale on March the 18th, which is very exciting. And the novella is the next in the All I Want series. And this one is called All I Want for Spring. And it's following on the story of Tori and Holly's romance. So if you haven't read All I Want for Christmas or All I Want for Valentine's, its follow-up, now's the time to catch up on the All I Want series before All I Want for Spring comes out, because you don't want to be lagging behind, do you? Or you could just wait for the box set, which will be out in early April, and then you can binge read the lot. Woohoo, indeed. I'm planning a summer book and an autumn book in the All I Want series too, and then I will round it off at the end of the year with a full-length novel. And I know all the titles for all those books, which is very unlike me because I'm rubbish at doing titles. So that's exciting that I don't have to worry about those. And as well as writing the All I Want books, I've also been working on what was meant to be a short story, but what has now turned into a novel. It's based on a real life event that took place in the UK in December. And I read about it and thought, wow, that'd be a great basis for a novel. So I've, it happened to a bloke, but I've turned it into it happening to a lesbian, you know, because it's a lesbian fiction novel. And I've done lots of research and I can't wait to reveal the title when I've thought of it, obviously, and the blurb and the cover and all of that, which I'll be doing very soon. I'm about halfway through the book. So, I should be able to tell you more maybe next time. Wait and see. I'm also working on book three in the London series. So that was my first book, London Calling. Last year I released This London Love about a year later. And so I will be I will be releasing book three in the London series by summer this year. This London Love came out last June, so I'm hoping to do it around the same time. I'm sort of 20,000 words in, so yeah, it should be doable, I think. I still haven't got a title for that one. So if anyone has got a title for my last London book, let me know. That'd be great. My dad actually came up with the premise for the second title, so well done him. Maybe I should ask him. I'll ask my dad. So lots going on with me work-wise. Loads of characters running around my head. And personally, in February, I've been trying to get a bit more healthy, doing a bit more walking, which is good. I'm still doing running at the gym, listening to lots of podcasts. And my wife and I tried to do a bit of a dryish February because we decided January was no longer work. We had a wedding and other things. So it's involved, we've kept it to just drinking two weekends of February. And we've managed it and it's been all right, really. So that's quite good. And and I've also baked a Mary Berry cake this month. So that's a personal milestone. It wasn't a fancy cake. It was just a banana bread. But it's a Mary Berry recipe, which I think almost makes me a professional baker, kind of. But mainly this month, obviously, like I said, it's just been about writing. I hit 60,000 words this month, which is the most I've ever done in a month. And it's the shortest month as well. So that's pretty cool. I'm very excited about that. And I'm not going to better it in March because I'm going on holiday for a week. But I hope to get close because the books aren't going to write themselves. But it's really awesome to be able to do a bit more and have lots of ideas. So that, yeah, it's the beginning of the year is going very well. So I'm very happy. And if you want to keep up with everything I'm writing and releasing, sign up for my mailing list at www.clairelydon.co.uk. And you'll get a free short story for your efforts. Oh, I'm so generous. Anyway, enough about me. Next up, we have my interview with the fantastic KG McGregor. I hope you enjoy. So joining me today on the Lesbian Book Club is lesbian fiction author KG McGregor. KG is a prolific writer with over 20 books to her name, and the latest being The Touch of a Woman. And I'm sure we can expect a lot more from KG very soon. As well as being a prolific writer, she's also the current president of the Lambda Literary Association, which is committed to preserving and nurturing queer literature. KG lives in North Carolina with her wife Jenny and cat Rosie. Welcome, KG.
Hey, thank you. Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I'm very glad to have you here. And does that intro just about sum things up?
That's all of me.
Yeah?
That's absolutely all that I am.
I'm sure there's a lot more. There's a lot more lurking in the layers, KG.
we'll find out over the next little while.
Yeah. So paint a picture of where you're speaking to me from today, sort of the room you're in and what's outside.
All right. I am in North Carolina in the mountains, and my house is a three-story house. My office is in the basement, and I'm there. I'm looking out on the deck, and all I can see is fog.
Right.
Through the trees. It's lovely. And it was chilly when I came down to my office, so my fireplace is going behind me.
Okay.
So it's a very lovely, peaceful setting.
Okay, right. And are you in, sort of, what kind of area are you in North Carolina? Is it sort of forest or...?
I live in the mountains. I live in the Blue Ridge Mountains, not far from the Blue Ridge Parkway.
Okay. So, yeah, and of course, as soon as you said that, I was thinking that the lovely song, which I'm sure you sing every day, right? The Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia.
No, I don't know that one.
Oh, you don't know it? Oh, right, okay.
you're talking Country Roads, John Denver.
It might be that one, yeah.
I think that's West Virginia.
Okay.
West Virginia.
Right, my geographical knowledge of the states is a bit limited, I must say.
Oh, mine of the UK is limited as well.
Yeah. So talk about your writing journey. I know you started out as a Xena fanfic author. So tell me a bit about that and what you were doing up to that point when you started, and then how you made the leap into being a published author.
Well, I've always enjoyed writing. Even in high school, I enjoyed research papers, and I saved them for years. I don't currently have them because I'm not really much of a pack rat. I move around so much that I make brutal decisions to discard things. But I saved research papers for years just because I enjoyed reading them, and I enjoyed thinking, oh, I wish I had written it this way. And then when I went to college, I got into doing market research and public opinion research, and I wrote a lot of business reports, and the writing was very almost therapeutic for me. I just enjoyed taking piles of information and turning it into something that people could understand. So I've never been afraid of deadlines. I've never been afraid of an empty page. Mm-hmm. So I think that when I started reading fan fiction on the web, I just found myself addicted. And one of the wonderful things about Xena fan fiction is that in the so-called Xenaverse, there was this concept that was established by the creators of this TV show that these two women who met in ancient Greece would go through eternity in new lives, meeting each other again, that their lives would be bound together forever. And so people began to speculate as to, well, what would that be like if Xena and her pal Gabrielle met in, say, the 1940s? What if they met in medieval times? What if they met in on the high seas? What if they met in the courtroom, mm-hmm. in the hospital, and so on? And so people began writing their own stories about Xena and Gabrielle. And so when I began reading them, of course, I had my own imagination. You know, I had this plan for how they would meet. And so I wrote it, I posted it on the web, and I got hundreds of emails about it, and it was so exciting that I just turned around and wrote a sequel and got some more and wrote another one and got some more. And after about 3 years of that, 3 or 4 years of that, I found that I was writing every spare minute I had. And that, you know, you always hear this this phrase, follow your bliss.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in a position that I really could, and I was also in a position that my work, I was traveling so much that it just wasn't quite as much fun as it used to be. Traveling for work can be exciting when you start, and then it's not.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave up my career and started, you know, staying home and writing. But that's a whole new dedication. You have to turn it from a hobby into a job, and that's what I did. I started about in 2005. Started writing full time. I've been writing roughly 2 books a year since then, and that's a very long answer to your very brief question.
No,
you
don't
even have to ask any more questions.
Yeah, that's it. Thanks so much for coming. No, it was a very good and detailed answer. I liked that. And so your website states that people should hang around if they like reading about lesbians dodging bullets, surviving disaster, playing golf, or cruising with friends. So, you know, I'm hoping one book has all of those in it. What's cropped up most in you?
Not all of them.
No.
There will be books where they dodge bullets. There will be other books where they survive disaster.
I think your aim should be to get all 4 in one. But...
I want to do that as a short story. Now, that's a challenge.
Yeah. What's cropped up most in your books? Do you tend to do the lesbians dodging bullets or disaster or playing golf and cruising?
It's interesting that the dodging bullets and surviving disaster are the more dramatic elements, whereas playing golf and cruising with friends, that's more... that's kind of a low key. That's going to be a pure romance where the story is written around the characters and the relationship they have. Whereas the first two will be very action driven. And I have found more recently that I mostly enjoy telling plot driven stories. The relationship driven stories are they're interesting to me to read, but I find them very difficult to write. I find the plot-driven stories just sort of unfold on the page, and I'm just enjoying the opportunity to tell a story that is about something.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not just a relationship where a pair of women will meet and will fall in love, but they will be involved in other things. I mean, our lives are so much more than our relationships. We have so many things that go on around us, and I think that as lesbians, that having these full stories depicted in our literature is important to us. It's about more than just how we feel and how we interact with a partner or a potential partner. It's how together we endure the things life throws at us.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And I'm just in the middle of writing a sort of one of my first plot-driven stories, so that's quite exciting for me. And I can really see the difference. So, yeah, that's a good point.
Do you find that that the action comes much easier in a plot-driven story?
Yeah, I mean, it's like I say, it's the first true one I've done, and I've done a lot of research for it, and yes, I can't wait to get back to it, and yeah, it just flowing onto the page, definitely.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
And I read your most recent novel, which is a plot-driven story, The Touch of a Woman, which focuses on a woman who loses her husband after a mass shooting and the fallout from that, and I take it that was influenced by, you know, the all too common news stories we hear about such events.
Well, I think the timing of the release of that book, it came right about the time of the San Bernardino shootings here in the U.S. And the sad thing is, if it hadn't come at that time, it would have come at the time of the Colorado shootings, or it would have come at the time of the Kalamazoo shootings that we just experienced over the weekend. So So it was a pretty good bet that a book about a mass shooting would come, would be released close to the time that we'd have one, because indeed they are all too common. But I would, in fact say that this particular book is not necessarily plot driven. That this is a relationship book. The Touch of a Woman is the story of two women and the things that they and that they overcome emotionally, mm-hmm. in order to be together. So that is something that I would call pure romance as opposed to a plot driven story.
Oh, right, okay. I thought it was a bit of both, really. So, but there you go. But I noticed when I was reading it as well that it was edited by Catherine V. Forrest, who wrote the seminal and wonderful Curious Wine. Has she been a long time editor with you?
Catherine's been my editor ever since the book Secrets So Deep, which came out, I think, in 2008. Okay. So yes, she's been my editor for a very long time, and she has also been my dear friend, someone who I would hold up one hand and say these are my friends in the world, and she would be there.
Oh, cool.
Wonderful person, and a fascinating person to sit around and talk about lesbian fiction.
Right, yeah, I think I had it in my head that I will get her on the podcast as well, because it would be awesome to talk to her.
You'll enjoy it immensely.
Yeah, and how's your writing changed? I know you were saying about wanting to write more plot-driven books, so how has your writing style and what you like changed over the years, and do you find yourself more drawn to hopeful stories as you get older, or drawn to showing the life you see around you? How has it changed?
Well, one of the ways I would say it has changed is it's become more perfect. I don't use that word to say that my work is perfect, but it's become better in terms of its structure and its craft. I had occasion recently to go back and reread one of my old books, and I just sat in the chair and twitched through the whole thing, because I was kind of horrified by my early writing and the level of it. So I would like to think that my writing has gotten better, that I do a better job of structuring my paragraphs and avoiding cliches. The cliches were really way too plentiful in my early work, and the, you know, the gazing across the room at one another and the eyes locking and things that are tropes of the genre, I believe, and I do try to avoid a lot of those what I guess I would call them cheesy things. I would like to think that my work is a lot more mature, and the style of work that I write, the convention in that it is an expected genre. When a romance reader picks up a book that is called a romance, they want to see two women meet, they want to see them overcome obstacles to be together, and by the end of the book they need a happy or a hopeful ending. And I don't think that I don't think I've written a book yet that doesn't have that, all of those elements in it. I have women who meet, I have obstacles, and they end on a happy or hopeful note. A lot of times that my vision of what is happy or hopeful is not the reader's vision. They want perhaps to see a different ending, but I think that every book that I've ever written has spoken to some people. Not every book will speak to everyone, but each one will have its audience.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And when you started writing and got published over 10 years ago, did you think you'd be here today with so many books under your belt? Was it always a long-term plan that you had?
Oh, no. I look back through my life. And in fact, I think it's influenced by my military upbringing. My father was in the U.S. Marine Corps, and we moved every few years. So I got used to starting new schools and living in new places, getting to know new neighborhoods and so on. And I took away from that this restlessness that wouldn't let me stay in one place very long. So I taught school for 7 years. I decided I didn't want to do that anymore. So I went back to college and got a degree in mass communications research, and I started my own business, and I loved that, but it was really a whole lot of work that it was the kind of career that was one of those 24/7 careers where you're just feeling like you've got so many balls up in the air all the time that you forget that you have the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And then I went to work for someone else. I worked for someone else for a very long time, and decided I didn't want to do that anymore. So I figured that I would write for 5 or 6 years, and that would be it. But now I tell myself that I'm going to write until all the stories run out. And so really that will be the end of my writing career, when I no longer have a story I want to tell.
Okay.
So it's I'm 60 years old now, and I'm not going to be changing jobs. If I leave this job, it will be to something else in the book industry, I'm sure.
Yeah. So do you have a well of ideas? That's what everyone wants to know now.
I have threads of ideas. They're not a lot of them aren't fully developed yet, so they can't be books until that happens. And a lot of times I make a mistake by sitting down and starting on a book that's not fully formed, and I'll get 20,000 words into it and realize that it's not going anywhere. And that's kind of heartbreaking. That's like growing something in a pot and having it start to sprout and then throwing it out.
That's a good analogy. I like that.
it's important to me to get the full book sort of sorted out in my head before I sit down to write it, because I always risk running into a wall. And when you're working on deadlines, when you've promised a book and it's due to the editor by November, then you have to get it in, because it's on the schedule and it's coming out, and it doesn't matter how hard it is to write, you still have to push through it and write it. And sometimes I think readers can pick up a book and they can look at it and read through it and say, this was one she really struggled with.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that you can tell when a writer's work has popped off the page versus something that looks laborious.
Mm-hmm. All right, okay. And you've won a whole host of awards as well, including Goldies, Lammies, and Reader's Choice Awards. So what's been the highlight of your career to date, would you say?
That's like picking my favourite child.
Or one of your what would be the one that stands out?
I have to say that winning a Lammy was very prestigious, and I was kind of over the moon about that. But winning Goldies has the beauty of winning a Goldie is that it's coming from my very tight community. It's an award that honors purely lesbian fiction, whereas a Lammy is from an association that incorporates all of queer literature.
Mm-hmm.
The Alice B. Medal of Appreciation for my body of work was very rewarding, and I have to say that I was extremely excited to be inducted into the Royal Academy of Bards Hall of Fame as a Xena fan fiction writer. that was really cool.
Okay, yeah, is that's to do with fanfic, isn't it? The Royal Academy of Bards. Yeah, yeah, I have heard of that. I've only just came across fanfic when I started doing this podcast, so I'm learning a lot as I go along. Talking of winning an Lammy, you are now the president of the Lambda Literary Association. That's right.
That's correct.
How did you come to be that? And what's your aim? I'm guessing it's like for a year. Is that right?
Well, the prior to my being on the board, the Catherine Forrest was on the board, mm-hmm. and she when her term was up, she asked me if I would be willing to serve, and I was hesitant, of course. You know, you know when you step up on for an organization like that, that you're committing to a lot of work, you're committing to do extra time, you're committing to take time away from your family, away from the projects you really need to be working on. But the fact is that I have benefited for many, many years from other people who stepped up and volunteered to do things. And I think all of us have a responsibility to do our best for our community. Not all the time, not a lifetime commitment by any means, but everybody can pull their weight. Everyone can do their part, and it makes a lighter load for everyone else. And I forgot your question.
I was just sort of saying about the Lambda Literary Association. For listeners who don't know what it is, fill them in. But how did you come to be the president? You were just saying you were on the board, and then Catherine Forrest asked you.
The board, when I joined the board, it was for a 2-year term, and our bylaws say that we can be on the board for up to 3 terms. We can be reelected to the board, and so I am now in my 3rd term. And last summer I was elected president, and I'm serving this year. I don't know for sure, but I will probably serve next year as well, and then I will roll off the board in the summer of 2017. That will be, and that's because because the bylaws have term limits, and so we'll be required to step down at that point. And that's so that the board will constantly have an infusion of new ideas and new people, and you don't, and no board wants to hand over all of its responsibility to just a handful of people, because then everyone else gets to be complacent, and you don't want that. You want everyone involved. You want new, fresh ideas. You always want an organization going forward, and so I'm very proud to do my part as president, and I'm president because I was elected by the rest of the board. That's how that came to be.
So is there anything different you're doing in the organization? Because I know it runs the as you say, sort of the LGBT and queer literature awards. Does it have sort of a broader remit than that?
Well, we do. We have 4 programs, in fact. The one program that everyone knows about is the Lammys, which we hold in New York every year, a big gala. And we give awards in about 20 different categories. Plus, we honor our pioneers, we honor mid-career writers, and we honor emerging writers. And another program is the Writers Retreat for Emerging LGBT Voices, and this is a residential retreat of 1 week that's held in the summertime in the Los Angeles area. It hosts about 40 writers who are just starting out, and they come for a very intensive instruction and community focus workshopping their various works. So mm-hmm. that is it's probably the premier LGBT residential workshop in existence. Okay. We have another program called Writers in the Schools, where we arrange for queer writers to Skype with classrooms all over the country and talk about their works and talk about how important it is for queer voices to be included in the literature that our middle schoolers and our high schoolers and our even people in college read, and how important it is to know when a writer, when a voice that they're reading is a queer voice. And then our fourth program is the Lambda Literary Review, which is our website. It's a magazine website, mm-hmm. of interviews and features and reviews and announcements. And my focus as president is, my primary focus is to ensure the financial ability of the organization to support these programs for many years to come. So that is, that's what I'm doing. I'm okay. doing a lot of fundraising. I'm doing a lot of community building and reaching out to foundations to keep this organization going.
Okay, I guess your background in business is coming in handy then, right?
Yes, it is. That's for sure.
and about the writing retreat, who can apply to that if there's anybody listening in today and they think, hey, that sounds like a good thing? Is it just U.S. Sort of resident based, or can anyone apply?
No, it's open to anyone. Anyone can apply. The we've actually just closed the submissions, and we're in the process now of selecting the fellows for this year.
Okay.
But when that is announced, it's usually announced in the fall, and the applications start rolling in. But if you go to our website, which is lambdaliterary.org, there are eligibility specifications all spelled out there, and there's also there are many ways to help people raise the money to come. So that includes giving scholarships to some people who might otherwise struggle financially. We just believe that the voices that we need to hear in our community are not necessarily the ones who can afford to go pay for something to be in a place for a whole week and study, but we're perfectly willing to support the people who need it.
Okay, no, that's really cool. That's good to know. Yeah, that sounds like an awesome thing to do. And getting back to your writing, can you describe your writing process to me these days? Do you write every day? Do you have I guess you write in your office, and do you have any mantras that you abide by?
Well, I actually on a personal note, I have a really bad back, okay. And the thing that makes my back worse is sitting in my chair. So a lot of times that makes deadlines difficult because mm-hmm. You know, you just kind of have to bear down and get it done, and that's the only way to get it done is to stay in your chair and keep working. And then, you know, by the time I finish, I'm just, you know, utterly miserable. So, so I've been trying to adapt to different ways. I have a dictator, a digital voice recorder that I carry with me when I go on hikes. Mm-hmm. And I'll go off on a 2-hour hike and write a whole scene of something, and then come home and only have to spend an hour to transcribe it and to clean it up. So that I found is probably my best way to be productive. But it's a little harder in the winter because I don't hike as much in the winter as I do in the summer and fall. So winter is kind of it's drudgery.
Yeah. I've
always treated writing like a job. It's a full-time job, and like most people, I work at least 8 hours a day.
Yeah. No, absolutely. You do. If you want it to be your full-time job, you have to treat it like one. But the dictation, are you using Dragon Dictate for that, or?
You know, I used to, but I've actually found that. That to write a scene which is about, you know, anywhere between 1,000 and 1,500 words, it's so much easier for me to just record it and then play it back and type it out.
Okay.
I was using Dragon for a long time, and there was so much cleaning up I had to do. Plus, I had to, you know, I had to move it from a WAV file to a different kind of. I had to bring it into iTunes, and it, there were just like 9 steps.
Many steps, yeah.
to get it formatted into my document and get all the smart quotes in and correct all the spelling and.
Yeah.
I just decided that wasn't worth it. It was, you know, it was taking me an hour of just the mechanical stuff, and I could have typed it out by then. So that's what I do.
Okay. No, yeah. I've been thinking about doing dictation, but there you go. Maybe that's what I should do. Walk around the park, just record it straight into my phone. You give me an idea.
Yeah.
That's cool. And what do you think of the explosion in lesbian fiction over the past few years since the advent of indie publishing and giving the publishing houses a run for their money?
Well, it's hard not to love it. There are a lot of voices that aren't being that weren't being heard before, and as a writer who publishes with who I think Bella Books is the premier lesbian publishing house. That's why I wanted to sign with them, because I respected them from afar. I wanted to be a part of that group. Mm-hmm. And now that I am, I just love and respect the people who work there so much because of the professionalism with which they approach their job. It's just wonderful to know that I can work with them and I can put out a product that is professionally done. Now, at the same time, I can look back to the early aughts, the 2003, when what we saw was an explosion of small vanity presses. And those presses took on some of the big presses at that time, the big presses being certainly not the lesbian presses, but, you know, the established Cleus Press, Allison Books, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And these new publishers came out, and frankly, these publishers were as amateur about publishing as I was about writing. I was not, I was writing fan fiction, and the editors in those days were hobbyists also. We all had full-time jobs doing something else. And so our part-time jobs were writing, editing, publishing. And we weren't, you know, we just weren't really professional about it. We thought we were. We were as good as we knew how to be, but we didn't know what we didn't know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And after my career with Bella Books, which is now at 11 years and close to 25 books, I just have a whole new respect for the right way to do things. Now, having said that, there are some very, very good independent writers that are bypassing the presses, and they're going their own route and publishing their own books. Hoorah for them. The market will separate the wheat from the chaff.
Absolutely. I think readers don't care, you know, if you're independent published or you know, sort of published with one of the more established lesbian presses, as long as your book's good. So just make sure your book's good and make sure you've got a good cover and make sure it's edited, and it's all good in my book.
And and I think it's fair to say that readers generally, and I'm speaking of the very, very broad audience, they have a wide tolerance for the quality of writing. But more discerning readers will gravitate to books that they know have been professionally edited and that they know are coming from writers who work on their craft and study their craft and improve it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And when can we expect the next title from you?
Well, the next title, let's see, Touch of a Woman came out in November. So the next one is due in May. It's called Trial by Fury. And I sent off the final manuscript just this morning. So, so it's ready to go to the formatter. And I'll be talking about that on my website, kgmcgregor.com, soon. And I'll post the cover that we've come up with for the book. It's a drama. It's a dramatic story. If I were marketing it compared to any of my other books, I would say it's Out of Love meets Secrets So Deep. So anyone who's read all of my books, if they enjoyed those two books, this book has a lot of elements of both of those.
Okay. Cool. So we'll look out for that. And congratulations on sending off today. So that's quite a momentous hurrah moment. And if you could be the love child of any two writers, alive or dead, who would you choose?
Oh, gosh, the love child. Now, you sent me this question, and I looked at it, and I had an answer to it, and I can't think of what that is. So why don't we skip that? And
All right, then.
I can jog that, because I did have a good answer.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right.
Dorothy Parker would be one of them.
Okay.
Dorothy Parker would definitely be one of them.
Okay. Dorothy Parker, that's a good start. That's a good mum to have. And what's the best piece of writing advice you've ever been given?
The best piece of writing advice was probably to listen to my editor. There is a thing about writing that writing is owned. It's so very personal that when you write something, you just kind of have it in your head that it's yours, and you own it, and your stamp's going to be on it, and so nobody's going to come in and tell me how to change what I've written, that I wrote it this way because I liked it. I think that my best advice was to allow myself to bend and to learn and to grow, because I wasn't going to do it on my own. I had to get pushed from the outside. I had to listen to editors tell me that, you know, you're making these mistakes over and over again, and you don't think they're mistakes. But when you stop making them, you'll realize that this is a better book without them. And so I think that by bending to my editor over the years, I think I've learned that. And I'm not really speaking just of Catherine Forrest, but if you have to have an editor telling you what to do, there's one to get.
Yeah.
But I've had other editors who also, Cindy Kreshap, for example, was she worked with me on a couple of books, and some of her pithy advice, and I did not lisp, some of her pithy advice was, the way she delivered it was so humorous that it stayed with me for years and years, and every time I see myself starting to slip into an old habit, I can see her scratch on the page and just laugh and say, oh no, I can't do that.
No, that's very good advice, and I would agree with that. I've learned so much from all the editors I've worked with, and you know, writing is a collaborative process. That's what you learn. So thank you very much for coming on the podcast today. It's been really cool. And where can people find out more about you? What's your website again?
Well, my website is kgmcgregor.com. I do most of my jawing probably on Facebook, as KG McGregor. So by all means, come and friend me. And I warn you that it's political season here in the U.S., and I do post a lot of political links and participate in a lot of political discussions. And I don't shy away from a lot of controversy. So So be fair warned, if you're just coming for the books, if you're just coming for the book information, then plug into my website, because I try to stay on topic there.
Okay. But if you like a bit of a political rumble, get you on Facebook as well.
That's right. Yeah. And you can also find out, you can also keep up at bellabooks.com. Okay. Keep up with not only me, but with all of Bella's writers. There are lots of book sales going on there all the time, and various features. Whenever there's a writer of the month, those books go on sale. So check in often, sign up for their newsletter, and get yourself some discounts.
Okay, good advice. Well, thank you so much again, KG. It's been awesome, and I hope you have a great rest of the day.
Well, thank you so much.
That's the end of this Lesbian Book Club. So this is me, Claire Lydon, signing off. If you fancy dipping into any of my other books, All I Want for Valentine's, All I Want for Christmas, London Calling, This London Love, or The Long Weekend, you can find out more at www.clairelydon.co.uk, or just look me up on Amazon, Kobo, Barnes & Noble, iTunes, or any other digital outlet. I'm also on Twitter at Claire Lydon, so come on down and follow me there. And if you'd like to sign up for my mailing list and get a free short story for your efforts, go to my website, enter your email address in the pretty pink box, and I will send you news of new releases and advanced readers, teams, and any offers, that exciting offers that I'm running. Thank you very much again to Denise at My Lesbian Radio for hosting and producing this podcast. It is much appreciated. And make sure you tune in to the Lesbian Lounge with Denise for all the latest LGBT news, views, interviews, and gossip. And join me again in March for some more Hot Book Club action, when I will be interviewing Lee Winter, who wrote The Red Files. See you then.